Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week of the freaking year. You already know it. And jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we got some fun UFC to talk about with you guys today. UFC Vegas 105 goes down this weekend. And honestly, despite not being the strongest card, we've been delivered some pretty good Apex cards this year. You know, out of the, this will be the fifth we've gotten, out of the four so far, I will say that about three of them have actually delivered in terms of the overall card. So I have high hopes for UFC Vegas 105. Great main event between Josh Emmett and Lerone Murphy. And we are going to see if I believe the undefeated curse is going to strike again this year, as Lerone Murphy is currently 15-0. We also have some other undefeated fighters on this card. So we'll be dropping predictions for every single fight, talking about each fight. That's going to be the main appetizer of today's card. Actually, I should say the main course. Some of the other appetizers are going to be getting our new UFC fights, as we've actually been blessed. Dana White on April Fool's Day gave us three massive fights. Pretty comical. Going to be talking about Reacher Season 3. That is right, one of my favorite shows. Reacher Season 3 dropped. I finally got around to watching it. It's been fantastic. Also going to discuss the NBA a bit more about the Final Four before the games this upcoming weekend. A lot of fun stuff on tap for today's episode. If no one knows, my car is actually, the battery died, so I've been carless. Let me just tell you guys, anyone who doesn't have a car and wish they have a car, I feel sympathy for you. I now have a newfound respect for when I'm driving my car, though. So just another thing to be thankful for with God. But that's all for our little intro. I say we get right on into things with new UFC fights. And we're going to just start kind of from when they've been announced up until as of late. Because we've got some good ones. Actually, you know what? I'll go through the... I was going to do that, but actually, I'm going to go through the lesser ones into the bigger ones. So first off, let's start off with a fight that was just announced for UFC Kansas City. And it is a matchup at featherweight between Chris Gutierrez and John Castaneda, rebooked from goodness, I don't even know. These two have been rebooked two or three times now. Finally, this fight's taking place. Chris Gutierrez, 8-3-1 in the UFC. Mind you, I know for a fact one of those losses is to Song Yadong. Pretty sure another one is to Rob Font. This dude has only really lost to tough competition. His opponent, John Castaneda, hails from Minnesota. All right, you want to know where he trains at? Mankato Martial Arts. I mean, come on. Come on, John Castaneda. God, I absolutely love him. I actually didn't realize he trains out of Mankato. That just can't be true. I refuse to believe he trains out of Mankato, Minnesota, where I'm from. So, John Castaneda taking on Chris Gutierrez. I mean, it's pretty obvious. I got to root for Sexy Mexi. He's from Minnesota. You already know I got to back him. But Chris Gutierrez, super tough talent. That should be a fun one for UFC Kansas. I don't even know. That might be on the main card. UFC Kansas City, we're going to talk about the main event for that in a second, but should be a pretty good card. Another one for UFC Kansas City. Timmy Kwamba back in action, taking on Roberto Romero. Roberto Romero had an absolute slugfest in his debut against David Onama. Took everyone off guard, was fight of the night. It was fantastic. Timmy Kwamba, 0-2 in the UFC, and, you know, hasn't really delivered so far. So if Roberto Romero delivers to the level that I saw him against David Onama, what was that, a couple months ago or something, then he's going to be an absolute problem. Okay, I'm excited for that one. That does take place at featherweight. I believe Timmy Kwamba was fine at bantamweight. I don't know. Those bantamweights and featherweights, sometimes we jump in weight classes. They're always messing me up. UFC Vegas 107 going down May 31st has another female fight on it. The number 3 ranked women's bantamweight, Caitlin Vieira, takes on the number 5 ranked Macy Chison. Perfect fight for the division. Caitlin Vieira, ranked number 3, 7-4, holds wins over Holly Holmes, Misha Tate, Sarah McCann. She's been pretty decent. She recently lost to the woman who's challenging for the belt next in Kayla Harrison, took her the distance. Caitlin Vieira has always been good, but yet never feels like, I never feel like she's good enough to win like the big fight to make it, because she beat Holly Holmes, but I think that was a robbery. I think everyone kind of agreed Holly Holmes won that. I don't know. It should be interesting. Macy Chison, 8-3 in the UFC, 10-3 professionally, coming off a dominant win over Myra Bueno Silva and also beat Norma Dumont. She's as legit as they come as well. This is probably the next number one contenders fight. If you ask me, this is probably the next number one contenders fight. Winner of this, I would give a title shot. I mean, there's no real option other than that at women's bantamweight. Women's bantamweight isn't the deepest division. You kind of have Norma Dumont still in the mix, as her when Macy Chison beat Norma Dumont, it was a bit ago. Norma's kind of jumped her to this point. But I would say winner of this gets the next title shot. Should be pretty entertaining. And hey, pretty good fight for a Apex card. You never know. Some of these women's fights, they can be sneaky good. Here's one for UFC Des Moines going down May 3rd. Bantamweight action as Gaston Bolanos, also known as the Walmart version of Ilia Topuria, back in action, fresh off his upset win of Cortavis Romeos, takes on Quang Bang Lee. Quang Lee from Vietnam, trains out of Minnesota. You know, kind of a tough going through his first two UFC fights, I can't lie. Takes a short notice fight against Chris Gutierrez, then fights someone who was coming off of the road to the UFC. I remember it was in UFC Macau and just got knocked out cold. It was sad to see. But Quang Lee back in action. Gaston Bolanos, so far through his first three UFC fights, all of them pretty competitive. This should be pretty interesting. It'll go on the prelims, I assume. Should be good. But let's get into our big four new UFC fights. First one, UFC 315 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, has a fight that I really hope is on the main card. Lightweight action. The number 13th ranked lightweight, Benoit God of War Saint Denis, back in action, man. This dude is 5-3 in the UFC. His losses are to Eliseo Lesco dos Santos on short notice, up 15 pounds. Dustin Poirier and Renato Moicano. So this dude is as tough as it comes, has some crazy finishes of Matt Frivola, Ishmael Bonfim. He's been phenomenal. Takes on the 22-3, 22 wins by finish, Joel Alvarez. Okay, Elphine Nomino is coming off a dominant win over Chakar Close, also holds wins over Thiago Moises, Elvis Brenner. Joel Alvarez is a problem. Joel Alvarez is a problem. This fight's not only not going the distance, this is probably going to be fight of the night. All right, Montreal, Quebec, Canada. They always give these Canadian cards just terrible fights. This is a gift. This is a silver platter. This is when you find the gem box in Clash of Clans, okay? This is going to be a fantastic fight. Benoit Saint-Denis, Joel Alvarez. I'm a big Benoit Saint-Denis fan. I don't necessarily hate Joel Alvarez, but I'm probably going to back Benoit just because I've been backing him since he joined the UFC. But, man, that is going to be an excellent fight. Which you could arguably say is maybe the best of the final three new fights that we've had. But the new UFC Kansas City main event was, you know, before we say what the new one is, of course, it was supposed to be Khalil Roundtree versus Jamal Hill. Jamal Hill pulls out. I mean, come on, Jamal Hill, the pullout king, that man has no children. It's just a shame. Really wanted to see Khalil Roundtree Jr. mess him up, but apparently he has lingering issues. I think Jamal Hill might not fight again. This dude has so many health issues, it's just not even worth it. But Khalil Roundtree Jr., you know, Jan Blachowicz just lost, got Volkan Ozdemir, got Alexander Rakic, please get him rebooked. But on the better hand, we have an even better main event. I kid you not, as the number 7th ranked welterweight takes on the number 13th ranked welterweight. That is right. Ian Machado Gary, the future, is back against Carlos Prates, the nightmare. Oh my goodness. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Carlos Prates, supposed to fight Jeff Neal at UFC 314. Jeff Neal pulls out. What do? They give him a main event opportunity. This is perfect. This is perfect for both of them because Ian Gary took Shavkat the distance. We know how good he is. And I think Ian Gary kind of realizes that he has to fight young up-and-comers. I mean, Ian Gary, you could have him fight Sean Brady. You could have him fight Joaquin Buckley. But this just makes sense. This really makes sense because Ian Gary is a contender. The dude's, what, 26? I want to say he turns 27 this year. He is young. Carlos Prates, you know, 13th ranked. He's coming in right about, like, 32, I want to say, 31. These two are very similar. It is, oh, man, it's going to be so good. Carlos, 4-0 in the UFC. He was the rookie of the year, the debut fighter of the year, whatever you want to call it, in 2024. Ian Gary, his only defeat is a, what, was it split decision? Was it unanimous decision to Shavkat Rakhmonov? I mean, that is not bad at all. 15-1, 21-6. These two are going to go to war. I'm backing Carlos Prates all day, but Ian Gary, man, can never count him out. Let's get into our UFC 316 co-main event and main event in Newark, New Jersey, June 7th. The co-main event, the women's bantamweight champion Juliana Pena, back in action for her first title defense as she takes on Kayla Harrison. That's right, Kayla Harrison picked up a win over Holly Holm, picked up a win over Kentlin Vera. Now you get her title shot. She is here to make the women's bantamweight division great again. And honestly, I think her and Julia Pena should be able to go at it. They have chaotic styles where Kayla Harrison takes you down, ground and pounds you, maybe even submits you. And I don't know what Julia Pena does. Julia Pena has just somehow wound up with a 12-5 record, 8-3 in the UFC, two-time women's bantamweight champion. I don't know. But Kayla Harrison all day, I can't lie. I can't lie. I'm worried about this card. Okay, first off, you're going to be getting Gilbert Burns versus Michael Morales. You're going to be getting Benoit Saint-Denis versus Joel Alvarez. You're going to get some other gems. But there's your co-main event, two grapplers. Your main event, Merab Dvoevshchelyi versus Sean O'Malley, the rematch. I don't know why we're doing it. I know Sean O'Malley's a draw. I know he's going to get a lot of hype, a lot of eyes on this card. They always kind of do weird cards in Canada, but they did this with 316. They did this with the Sphere, and you wound up getting 50 minutes. co-main event and main event of Valentina Shevchenko grappling Alex Grasso and Merab grappling Sean O'Malley. So I think, depending how Julia Pena versus Kayla Harrison goes, it's going to set the tone for the evening. I think either Kayla Harrison goes out there, finishes her, and you're going to see a finish in the main event, or you're going to see dual full five-round grappling affairs. I don't really know what Sean can do to adapt, because I mean, we've seen Sean drop, I'll lose all five rounds. I mean, people are saying Sean O'Malley won that fight. I don't think so. Not even in the slightest. Merab not only has fought since then, he is the current fight of the year in 2025. He beat Umar Nurmagomedov. He humbled Umar Nurmagomedov. And he's back in action, 19-4, 12-2, going for his second title defense. He is the craziest resume I've seen. Henry Cejudo, Jose Aldo, Sean O'Malley, Peter Yan, champions. He's just been utterly insane. So I'm actually rooting for Merab in this one. Sugar Sean, 18-2, wins over Marlon Vera, Peter Yan, Aljamain Sterling. It's just, there's nothing that I see Sean altering besides landing the knockout punch. And I think it was all evident that he didn't pull the trigger when they fought the first time. He never really pulled back the trigger and was like, hey, I'm going to knock out Merab. He never did. He got out grappled for all five rounds. He even got out struck. There was at one point that Merab was kissing him on his back. Okay, it was ridiculous. And I think if Sean really truly wants to get that belt back, he's going to need to change his mindset. He's going to need to be more on the attack. And I think with Merab, Merab doesn't have a controlling grappling style. So I think you almost just have to accept he's going to take me down. If anything, you need to sprawl. Just keep punching his face. We haven't really seen Merab deal with too much adversity in a while. I mean, dude's just an absolute unit. So I'm backing Merab for that, but trust me, it should be pretty good. So a lot of new UFC fights. Last week, we weren't even able to discuss a new UFC fight. We've been blessed with a bunch here. So I think the biggest question is, what's going to be next for some of our divisions? What's going on at lightweight? What's going on at light heavyweight? What's going on at middleweight? A lot of questions to still be answered, but right now, the UFC is setting up some good events for the first start of the year. Continuing on the sporting track of things, we're going to do a little basketball movie basketball here. Let's discuss the current NBA standing. So we're not going to talk about NHL today, just because I feel like I know more about the NBA personally, and I don't even hate the NHL, but I also want to spread it out for next week and talk about the NHL, because both leagues have about 5, 6, 7 games left for every team for their season. So currently in the NBA, going to the Eastern Conference, Cavaliers have clinched either the number one or number two spot, but the Celtics are on a 9-game win streak in the number two spot in the East, 56-19. Cavs are 60-15. Close on their tails. So if you're the Cavs, you just need to finish your last 7 out strong, get the wins. And if you're the Celtics, if you win out, you could potentially steal the number one seat. Now, who will they be matching up with? I mean, obviously, I don't really know if it matters. You're either going to be taking on the Bulls, Heat, Hawks, Magic. Those are going to be your play-in teams, I guarantee, and I wouldn't give any of them a chance to beat either of those teams. So, Bulls, currently are number 10. I think they've locked in a play-in spot. You still have technically, the Heat, Hawks, and Magic could beat out the Bucks for that number 6 spot, but I doubt it. Knicks in third, they're 48-27 on a 3-game heater. They're probably going to be locked in. I believe they're just about going to lock in unless they really lose out that number 3 seed, so they'll probably be taking on the Bucks or maybe even the Pistons. Pacers in 4, 44-31. That Pacers team is good. Tyrese Halliburton's been an absolute unit. He's been leading that team well, and just overall, they play great basketball. I mean, Obi Toppin has improved his career since leaving New York. Pistons at the 5, 42-33. The bad boy Pistons are back. Bad boy Pistons are back. They were scrapping with the Minnesota Timberwolves the other night. I loved to see it. I really loved to see it. It was entertaining. It brought the crowd up. And don't get me wrong, Dante DiVincenzo and Naz Reid getting suspended hurt, but still pretty entertaining. Like I said, Bucks at the 6, 41-34. No one really talks about how Damian Lillard going there hasn't really done much. It hasn't really done much. The Bucks actually might be a tad bit worse. Gonna be honest, don't get me wrong, the Trailblazers absolutely suck, but the Trailblazers need to move on. You can only make the playoffs and lose in round 2 so many years in a row, and I think it was the right move. But Bucks, don't really know how they're gonna do when they take on someone like the Knicks or Pacers, so we'll have to see. Magic at the 7, 37-40, the top 6 teams are all gonna finish with positive records. You're looking at the Magic 37-40, Hawks 36-39, Heat 34-41, and Bulls 34-42, which are all probably going to finish in the negative range. So I'll be very curious to see how that transpires. Teams that are eliminated, Raptors 28-48, abysmal season. I give them a pretty good chance to land Cooper Flagg. I can't lie. I honestly think, because the NBA always kind of tailors it where they want players to go, and I could see Cooper Flagg going there. Don't really see him going to the Nets. Nets are 25-51. They're currently in 12th. They're on a two-game win streak. They do play the Timberwolves next, but Cameron Johnson, he's pretty good. Other than that, this Nets team, kind of irrelevant. 76ers, 23-53. They're in 13th. I feel bad for Joel Embiid, but at the same time, their team's been deep progressing, and they just, 76ers are kind of taking a step back from where they used to be. There's that one spree where they were the worst team, then they were in the top five. Now they're back in the bottom. 14th, Hornets, 19-56. I compare the Hornets and Wizards in the NBA to the Blackhawks and Sharks in the NHL. Two teams that were the bottom two teams in 2024, and they're still, again, the bottom two teams in 2025. Hornets, 19-56. Yes, LaMelo Ball is a stud. Yes, they got a lot of good stars. I can see Cooper Flagg going here, but they really need something going on with the Hornets. Their team is just not complete. And the worst team for a second year in a row. They're going to be competing with the Jazz, might I add, but definitely the worst team in the East, the Wizards. They are 7-31 at home, 9-28 on the road, 2-8 in their last 10, three-game losing streak, 16-59. It's rough. It's rough, and they just don't have a star. They really don't. I mean, when I read the players on this team, I mean, Jordan Poole, okay, he was the backup in the Warriors. We all thought that Jordan Poole was going to be the guy to take over for Steph Curry, end up not being. Alex Saar, like I said, kind of a weak rookie class this year. He'll need to progress. Carlton Carrington has been doing pretty good. I think he's either the backup point guard or backup shooting guard. He does an okay job. Chris Middleton, just always been a veteran role player, not really working on a team like this. Marcus Smart, similar to Chris Middleton. You have Corey Kispert, Kyshawn George, A.J. Johnson. Got a lot of young guys. Malcolm Brogdon, former rookie of the year. Y'all remember Malcolm Brogdon? Yeah. Sadiq Bey, Anthony Gill, Sean Holmes, just... I don't even know what's going on in the GM office. Someone has to get fired. Someone has to get fired, or they got to tweak something, because the East is pretty tough. Pretty tough, but that's current standing of the NBA in the East. Getting into the Western Conference, there's a huge discrepancy. I mean, this is one of those years where you clearly have a number one team, and that's the Thunder. 63-12, 10-0 over their last 10. They're on a 10-game winning streak. They are 14.5 games ahead of the Rockets in second, so... Not only are they going to beat up the Cavs for the number one team in the league, they've already locked up the entire Western Conference. So Thunder, they're technically your favorites to win the NBA Finals. I guess you want to look at that. I think their biggest competition, if they were to get down to the wire, is going to be the Timberwolves, the Lakers, the Nuggets, but that'll be something for the playoffs. Into the Rockets, 49-27. It's pretty close. Pretty close for your top six spots. Rockets at 2, 49-27. Nuggets at 3, 47-29. Then you have the Lakers, 46-29. Warriors, 44-31. Grizzlies, 44-32. T-Wolves, 44-32. And Clippers, 43-32. Those are your 2 through 8. And anything can change. Anything can change. There is a 6-game difference with right around 5 to 7 games left. So I think the Rockets might finesse their way to a 2 seed, maybe get bounced in round 1 to a team like the Timberwolves or Clippers, Nuggets at the 3, Lakers at the 4. I think as long as those two don't play each other in round 1 out of 4 or 5, they'll advance. I think this Warriors team is good. I think Steph Curry is really good with his team, but I don't think they're good enough to win in round 1. Grizzlies at 6, similar scenario. I think the 3 and 4 seeds are going to pick up wins regardless. Now, when we get into that 7 versus the 2, I would take the Timberwolves and Clippers over the Rockets. I would not take them over the Nuggets. That's in my opinion. For the play-in, I mean, anything can happen. Anything can still happen. Your play-in teams are looking like they're either going to be Warriors, Grizzlies, and Timberwolves. One of those is going to have terrible luck. I'd even throw the Clippers in at 8. What of those teams is going to have the unfortunate luck of being the 7 and 8 seed? Now, as for your 9 and 10, it's currently a battle between the Mavericks at 9, Kings at 10, and Suns at 11. Trailblazers are out. 33-43, terrible season. Spurs, 31-44, 5-game losing streak. Victor Wembanyama, imagine if he was on the Lakers, they'd be unstoppable. Pelicans at 14, 21-54, the Zion Williams experiment has officially, I can say, failed. And the Jazz at 15, 16-60, they are the Wizards of the West. No one can even figure out how their team reached this point. I mean, you look at this team, they got Walker Kessler. Walker Kessler's a dog. Lauri Markkanen was better last season than this season. Colin Sexton, not bad, just struggling to lead the team. Jordan Clarkson, Keontae George, Isaiah Coller, Kyle Filipowski. That's a great starting lineup. They even got Johnny Juzang. They've got Cody Williams, yet it just isn't working. They don't have that veteran presence. They don't have the big name talent, and that's why they're on a 6-game losing streak and are 16-60. So I think the main question is, who's getting Cooper Kupp? I don't see him going to the Jazz. I saw some speaking to me, telling me Raptors, Hornets. I don't see Wizards. I'm seeing Raptors, Hornets. I'm seeing Jazz too as a potential. Jazz too, but I don't know. They're going to tailor who they think it's going to go to. But right now, I mean, Celtics and Thunder is probably your favorite for NBA Finals. Now, in terms of stats for the year, I haven't mentioned this at all, but I figured I'd touch on this. Points per game, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 32.8. Giannis, 30.4. Nikola Jokic, 29.7. Anthony Edwards, 27.3, and Jason Tatum, 27.1. Those are your top 5 points per game leaders. Now, everyone's saying Shai is going to be MVP. I want to just look at some. Shai, 32.8. Nikola's currently in third at 29.7, just dropped 61 points the other night. Rebounds per game, Domantas Sabonis, 114. Cat at 2, 12.8. In third, Nikola Jokic, also 12.8. Ivica Zubac of the Clippers, 12.6. Walker Kessler of the Jazz, 12.2. Look at that. Nikola is third in rebounds per game and points per game. All right, now let's get into assists. Trae Young, 11.6, number one. In number two, 10.2 assists per game, Nikola Jokic. Cade got 9, Tyrese 9, James 8.6. Field goal percentage, Jared Allen, 70.6, top dog. Jalen Duren of the Pistons, 69.6. Rudy Gobert of the T-Wolves at 3. Also got Jacob Poeltl, Ivica Zubac. It's all those centers who just throw up little hucks here and there. Three-pointers made. Currently, there's a tie. Edwards does hold the top spot in the tie at 292. Also, Malik Beasley, 292. Curry in third with 282. And then you have Derek White at 4 with 247 and Jason Tatum at 5 with 240. So, currently a battle between Ant, Malik, and Curry for most threes made on the year. Three-point percentage, Taurean Prince at 45%. Very interesting. And blocks per game, here we go. Walker Kessler, 2.4, leads the pack. For steals per game, Dyson Daniels of the Hawks, 3.1. And in second, Nikola Jokic, 1.8. So Nikola Jokic is currently averaging a triple-double. His team is third in the league. He is also in the top five for steals in the NBA. There should be no competition. I understand the Thunder are super good, but Thunder are overall a good team. They have great team chemistry. Shai is a free throw merchant. This is almost like Josh Allen and Lamar, where people are going to debate. People are going to say it should be Joker. People are going to say it's going to be Shai. I'm going to say Joker, but if they give it to Shai, it's not a robbery. It's not a robbery if whoever wins it. It's just, it's very competitive this year, and someone's got to win it. Someone's going to lose it. It's just how it goes, but that's all that. Let's move out of the NBA and get into a fantastic show, one of my favorite shows, and that is Reacher. My mother, my lovely mother, was telling me, yeah, Reacher season 3 kind of took a dip. It wasn't as good as the previous seasons, and I watched the first few episodes, and then I finished it, and I was fairly surprised at how wrong she was. What was she talking about? Reacher season 3, just as good as the first two seasons. I think season 1 is still the best, because it was new, and you did the small town vibe, and this is almost like Cars, the Cars franchise through the first season. So the first Cars, small town, big guy, does stuff. You then go global. That's kind of what they did in season 2. They really took it more broad, bigger company. But here what they did, they had these big bad villains that you really had a good villain. You still made this small towny vibe. Reacher was still using Keeley and everyone, his contacts. It was phenomenal. Neagly, I think it is. But, I mean, entire plot of this season, and it's such a great plot twist to start the year. Reacher apparently stops a kidnapping attempt, and then works his way into being a crime boss, is like, what do you want to call it? Henchman, if you will. And then you find out there's much more to it, and he's actually on this secret mission working with the law, you can basically say. And fantastic. It gets an 8 out of 10 for me. You know, 8 out of 10 IMDb, 90% through Google users, 8 out of 10 on Prime Video, and 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is that good. Truly, it is that good. Reacher, great in this one. You have this big bad villain for season 3, which I absolutely love. I can't remember his name. Oh, Oliver Rickers. He's like 6'8". He's Dutch. He is phenomenal. You have Sonya Cassidy starring as the love interest of Jack Reacher this season. She's phenomenal. Always getting good love interest. honestly, absolute dog. Anthony Michael Hall plays the amazing, you know, always the one character that has kind of like a arc turn, you know, starts as like this crime boss and basically ends up, you know, kind of sacrificing that to save his son, which is phenomenal. Brian T going from Chicago Med to play this evil psychotic villain, amazing character work. Johnny Birchtold as the son, kind of like there's always this one person that Reacher takes under his wing. That's who it is this year. Just amazing stuff all around. And like every Reacher season, it ends open-ended for more stuff to come, and yet is still close enough where if they end it, that's where they could end it. I'm excited to see where they take this story, but the characters I felt were really good. The action was good. There's always like realistic fight scene action. And then there's Reacher and the big bad guy that's like 6'8", Paulie, I think the character's name was, that are just beating each other to death. And I will say the one thing I love about this is they're not afraid to get gory. They're not afraid to show you like violent deaths and stuff, which I absolutely love. They do go for some shock factor here, which I really love, of characters dying that you wouldn't expect, of just some certain themes that are a bit darker. And I really like that for this season. I have no idea what my mom was talking about. I actually got confronted about it. I got to call her some tomorrow. Actually, I might call her right now and ask her what the heck she was thinking, because Reacher Season 3 was phenomenal. It gets an 8 out of 10 for me, but it's a good 8 out of 10. The only reason I'm not throwing out 10 out of 10s is because it's not the final season. I think it's actually renewed for 5 more to go to Season 5. And there's so many books, so many Reacher books. This one was based off of Persuader. And like I said, you could bring this season on forever. It makes a lot of money. Everyone loves it. The actors love it. The studio loves it. And the fans love it. That's just a perfect combo right there. And just the wide range of acting that you see from Alan Ritchson being this, you know, party boy as Thad Castle on Blue Mountain State. Now he's the serious Jack Reacher. And you see him struggle with things because Jack Reacher always wants to do good, yet understands he has to kill people, understands he has to do bad things, and he just always evades getting out of trouble. And I always love how they have started every season like, okay, how does he actually fall into trouble all the time? Lo and behold, they always find a way to write it. And I think the writing worked perfectly. So please go check out Reacher Season 3. Please go check it out. It is so, so good. I can't rave about it enough. I can only say so many things. But when it's at 96% Rotten Tomatoes, when IMDb's giving it an 8 out of 10, trust it. Actually trust it. So Season 5 probably should, or Season 4 I should say, should probably be coming in 2026 before we know it. The reviews for Season 3 have been outstanding. There's no reason they shouldn't be dropping a new season soon. So go check it out. Go give it a go. And honestly, I might have to go call my mother and let her know, hey, you should go check this out because it's phenomenal. On the other side of things, we're back in the basketball world. Instead of Reacher bouncing heads on the ground, we're bouncing college basketballs on the ground. As the Final Four will be going down this weekend on Saturday, I believe, are your two Final Four games. And then the championship is on Monday, if I remember this correctly. And obviously you have Auburn, Florida, Duke, Houston, all number one seeds. I think the biggest upset you're going to see is if Duke loses to Houston. I'd also say maybe Florida dropping a game to Auburn. I think an Auburn-Houston Final Four or championship game would be pretty shocking. But other than that, none too surprises. All the one seeds, all phenomenal. It's anyone's ball game. But obviously, I have Duke and Florida, Duke over Florida in the championship. But what I wanted to touch on is which team has had the easiest run to the Final Four. That's what I want to decide. So let's quickly look at how each team got here, and then we're going to say who we think had kind of a layup to get to where they're at. Mind you, all of these teams are one seeds and are super good. Starting in our South region, Auburn, they get to take on the number 16 seed Alabama State, win by 20, no shocker there. They then play the 9 seed Creighton, which honestly, this Creighton team felt a bit better than a 9 seed. They win 82-70, but they were down at halftime. They had to fight super hard in that game. So Creighton was a super tough game for that Auburn team. Round two, they take on Michigan. Similar scenario. Now, they win the 78-65, but the game was close the entire way through. And this 5-seed Michigan team was super tough. I mean, it was, I think, out of the Michigan, UC San Diego, Texas A&M, and Yale, of those four teams, whoever was going to play Auburn, Michigan was the toughest, and Auburn was able to pass it. They then get into the Elite Eight, beat Michigan State by 6. That was tough. That was tough. Michigan State would not go away easy. I think a lot of people are thinking it was either going to be Iowa State, UNC, but number two seed Michigan State made it, played them hard, yet Auburn was able to get past them. So having to take on 16 seed, 9 seed, 5 seed, 2 seed, pretty tough. I think Auburn showed a lot of resilience in the round 32, Sweet 16, and Elite 8, and they for certain have earned a spot in the Final Four. Their opponent, Florida in the West, takes on Norfolk State in round one. They're, of course, a 16th seed, 95-69, blowout, doesn't count. Round two, UConn, the defending champs, Dan Hurley, two-point win, 77-75, arguably the toughest game Florida has been in to date. It was not easy. UConn was easily the best 8 seed. No one compared, and it was really a tough matchup for them. But Florida got past it. Dan Hurley threw a tantrum. No more you can expect. Sweet 16, I thought Maryland would be a challenge, but sorry, Derek Kingley, 87-71. Florida, it was supposed to be a tough game, but nope. Maryland is blown out by 16. Never had a prayer. Getting into the Elite Eight, Texas Tech, 84-79, played a fantastic game. It was truly a great game. Did this one go to overtime? I honestly can't remember. I don't know if I can actually look at that somehow, but I believe this might have gone to overtime, if I'm not mistaken, as I try and look live on here. I don't know, but this was a super close game. It was as intense as it gets, and Florida managed to get through it. They truly managed to get through it. So UConn and Texas Tech proving the toughest test for them. And when I match that up to Auburn, I'm also going to say that Florida had tougher games against UConn, Texas Tech compared to Auburn's games against Creighton and Michigan State. So as of right now, as much as they had two blowout wins, Florida, I think, out of the two, had a tougher path to the Final Four. As for Florida and Auburn, that should be a fantastic game. I think all eyes are going to be on Walter Clay Jr., I want to say, and Johnny Bruni. I think those are going to be the two key star matchups that you're going to want to keep out when you're looking for the star players of each game. Let's get into the east side, the upper right of our bracket. Duke, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. When you have Duke, they're obviously the number one team in the tournament. Let's say you seed all 64 teams. Duke's number one. Blowout St. Mary's, 93-49. Not even close. Blowout Baylor, 89-66. Arizona, 100-93. Wouldn't go away easily. Caleb Love refusing to bow down. They get past them. And then Alabama, 85-65. Win by 20. I mean, Duke dealt with adversity in the Arizona game and at the start of the Alabama and Arizona game. But when I mean start, I mean the first 10 minutes. That's the start for each game. So Duke, out of the three so far, just no competition. You'd have thought Alabama would have given them a run for their money, but no, none of that whatsoever. And I don't even know who would have. Honestly, it was always going to be Alabama, Wisconsin, and BYU, you know, just never really were going to give them that adversity. So Duke, easily the easiest schedule so far. I mean, I wouldn't even say it's easy taking on Bama and Arizona back-to-back, but they made it look easy. Getting into the Midwest, Houston, SIU Edwardsville, 78-40, giving up the least amount of points in the round of 16, says a lot. They then take on Gonzaga, 81-76, not easy, not easy for Houston. Gonzaga, basketball school, we've known they're good, refused to bow down, and really had to dig in deep to pull up the victory. How about to make matters even crazier, Purdue in the Sweet 16, they win on a last-second layup with just like 1.1 left on the clock after the layup went through. Truly the toughest test for Houston. Then, oddly, they blow out Tennessee by 19. So, Houston dealt with crazy adversity in round of 32 and especially in the Sweet 16, yet they get to the Elite Eight and it's no issue. So, I think arguably Florida had the toughest games, but when I actually look at what should have been the toughest test, I mean, you have, you know, Duke taking on a 9-4-2, I think is, you, I guess, could say one better than Auburn's chances. Florida taking on a 1-8-4-3 might be considered better. And even Houston taking on an 8-4-2. But it just appears to me Florida had a tougher path to get there. Playing a good team like Auburn might give them some trouble. But I'm going to say, you know, Houston's win over Purdue was last second, so you could say that, but I'm going to stick with Florida. It's going to be a good two good games, three actually with the championship. I doubt we're going to get any blowouts. This is going to be high-level basketball. As much as, you know, there hasn't been much madness I mean, what we really had no upsets. What we had 1 12-seed win, 2 12-seeds win. We had a 10-seed. We had 12-seed there, 10-seed there, 11-seed. We had the 12-seed, like 13, 14, 15, 16, no upsets. You had 1 double-digit seed of 10 in the Sweet 16. In your Elite 8, their lowest seed was a 6 or something? Was that what it was? No, it was a 3, for goodness sake. So it's been high level. It's been competitive, but I'm going to pick Duke to come out on top. It's going to be good. Going to be good. Cooper Flagg, watch out for him on Duke. And LJ Cryer on Houston. Man, been with the team a while. He's an absolute senior stud. They got a lot of good players on all these teams. You're going to see a lot of future NBA stars balling out in this Final Four. So as much as there's no freaking 12 seeds, 13 seeds, 16 seeds, whatever you want to call it, you get some high-level ball with all these number one seeds. And I'll tell you what else is going to be high level. And that's going to be all of our fights for this upcoming weekend. UFC Vegas 105 goes down this weekend. And we got the locks. We got your predictions for all fights. I mean, yet another packed card. I think there's like 13 fights this week. I absolutely love it. Let's check it out and drop our predictions for every single fight. Kicking off our card, we're in the women's strawweight division. Everyone's favorite division, right, guys? We love the women's strawweight division. As Vanessa Lil Monster Demopoulos takes on Talita Problem Child Alencar. Vanessa is 11-6. Talita is 5-1-1. 5'2 to 5'1. Vanessa holds just 1 inch in height and a 1 inch reach advantage. 59 inches, 58. Wow. Not even 60-inch reach. These ladies got some short arms. I guess you could say that orthodox stance for both of them. Let's start with Vanessa. Vanessa minus 140 is the favorite for this contest. Vanessa is 36 years old from Nevada. Of her 11 wins, 1 knockout and 4 subs, all 6 of her losses, she has not been finished except for one. That was her last contest out in September, when Jacqueline Amorim shockingly submitted her with an armbar in round number one, just about 3.5 minutes in. Vanessa Demopoulos, look, she's gone 5-4 in the UFC, never really done much. Holds a win over Emily Dikute. That was her last win in May of 2024. I mean, other than that, she has not done much with her UFC tenure. Has one armbar in 2023, which was a performance of the night. Other than that, just decision after decision. But, I mean, hey, she's been pretty decent in terms of took Karolina Kowalski the distance, took JJ Aldrich the distance. Those are two ranked women. So, Vanessa Demopoulos coming into this one with that standing. Her opponent, Talita Alencar, the plus 120 underdog, 34 years old from Brazil, but now lives and trains out of Florida. Of her 5 wins, she holds 3 by submission. 1-1 in the UFC, picked up a unanimous decision on Dana White's Contender Series. Actually was a split draw on there, then won her debut by split decision over Roiana dos Santos, then lost her second matchup in August against Stephanie Luciano. So little is known about either of these women. Vanessa, Talita, who do I go with? I don't really know. I'm going to be honest, little to be desired from both of these women. Look, last time out, Talita took on Stephanie Luciano, got dropped, managed to get a takedown, nothing much there. As for Vanessa, I mean, got submitted right away in round one, got taken down, got submitted. Look, this is where we thrive on underdogs, guys. This is where we thrive. Give me Talita Alencar, not just to win, but by finish with a submission, plus 120. This is where we're making our cheddar cheese. This is where we're retiring the family. I'm going with Talita Alencar to win this one. And you know, only 1 inch shorter, only 1 inch reach less than Vanessa. These two are pretty short in terms of the women's strawweight division. I'm confident that if anyone's going to win, it's going to be Talita Alencar. Sticking with some of our shorter divisions, bantamweight action for the men, as Victor La Mangosta Henry takes on Pedrino Falco. Some of these nicknames, they're just blasphemy to me. Victor Henry, 24-7 with 1 no contest. Pedro, 16-4, 5'7 to 5'6, just 1 inch in height for Victor Henry, and he holds 2 inches in reach, 68 to 66. Switch stance for Victor Henry, La Mangosta, orthodox for Pedro Falco, minus 170 for Victor, plus 140 for Pedro Falco. Victor Henry, 37 years old from California. This man has 7 knockouts and 8 subs out of his 24 career wins. And out of his 7 losses, he's been submitted once, which was his last time out against Charles Jourdain, who submitted him in November. Wow, Charles Jourdain coming off a win. We got to get Charles on that Montreal Quebec card that we were talking about, UFC 315. Victor, he has been 3-2 with a no contest in the UFC. Yeah, losses to Jourdain and Rafael Sunsal, wins over Raoni Barcelos, Tony Gravely, he TKO'd Raoni Yaha, which doesn't say much, and had no contest against Javid Bashrat. I'll say the one thing that stands out to me is this guy's 37. And it feels like he's just getting into the UFC, which is never really a good sign. He is the favorite in this one. 15 of 24 wins have came by finish. Yet to really get a good finish in the UFC. That Ronnie Yaha one, I don't really consider a good finish. We'll see how he does against Pedro Falco. Pedro plus 140, 32 years old, so 5 years younger, from Brazil. 11 of his 16 wins have came by finish. 6 KOs, 5 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's only been TKO'd once. Actually, he might have been subbed. It was a TKO, if I remember correctly, that he got finished in. He actually did last compete in a mixed martial arts contest of some kind when he did a grappling match in October, which he won. But the last time he was actually in the UFC and had a fight, dropped a decision to pay Victor Hugo in April of last year. Won on Damas Quintero series with a round 3 TKO. Pedro just, you know, you don't know what you get. Landed a takedown in the Victor Hugo fight. Other than that, pretty back and forth. This is such a 50-50 fight, and these are just, there's a lot of fights on these cards where there's close matchups, and I want to ride with the underdog. I want to ride with the underdog because Toledo, Vanessa, whoever wins, I'll be okay. Victor and Pedro, whoever wins, I'll be like, okay. So it's not going to be much of a shocker. I'll say Pedro does have a better finish rate at 11 out of 16 compared to 15 out of 24 for Victor Henry. Victor is 37. I do often see with the bantamweights as they get older, they start to decline. Not really saying Pedro is a young spring chicken, but being a plus 140 underdog, gotta hop on him. Give me Pedro Falco by unanimous decision. I could even just see Victor Henry dropping this decision and it being a bad split decision or something. Back in the women's strawweight division as Loma Lukbunmi finally back in action. Long time, Loma, as she takes on Estela Nunes. Loma, 9-3. Estela, 6-5 with a no contest. How is she still in the UFC? 5'4 to 5'1. Estela has 3 inches in height and has 5 inches in reach. 66 to 61. Orthodox stance for both of our ladies. Loma Lukbunmi, -935. Estela, +480. That's right. Loma is a massive favorite for this one. The 29-year-old is from Thailand, from Phatuket. Phatuket, I don't know if that's actually how you pronounce it. Her family owns a gym out there, which is pretty cool. Of her 9 wins, 1 knockout, 1 submission. Of her 3 losses, she's been submitted just once. So that's right, 9 of her 12 professional fights have gone to a decision. So far in the UFC, I mean, not too bad if I'm being honest. 6-2, decision losses to Angela Hill and Lupi Godinez. Not bad at all. Currently rides a 3-fight win streak. Last fought in February of 2024. Holds wins over Bruna Brazil, Elise Reed, and Denise Gomez. I mean, Loma gets it done in the takedown department, can also throw some strikes, has 1 finish by rear naked chokehold, got that in February of 2023, so happy to have Loma back in the UFC, been a while, thought she was from Hawaii, I think we have some Hawaii fighters later down the card, but representing Thailand, Loma Lukbunmi, excited to see her. Her opponent, Estela Nunes, this should be a layup for Loma Lukbunmi, but be careful with these women fights. Estela, that's right, the +480 underdog, 32 from Brazil. Of her 6 wins, 2 knockouts, and of her 5 losses, she's been finished in 4 of them, 2 by knockout, 2 by submission. She's had fights booked against Molly McCain multiple times, both of them falling apart. She's now stepping in to replace Vanessa Carnalosi, who was supposed to take on Loma Lukbunmi, so she's looking to get a fight in. She's currently 0-4 in the UFC, and she's been finished twice. Arnie Carnalosi, actually the woman she's replacing, submitted her in 2021. Sam Hughes beat her by decision in 2022. She then lost to Yasmin Jaraguay in December of 2022, and last fought in July of 2023, where Victoria Dukova injured her in 34 seconds into the fight. So this is an easy pick. Loma Lukbunmi, got to go with a submission here. -935, I'd love to go with an underdog in this one, but I'm going to be honest. Estela Nunes is just not cut for the UFC, and they're trying to give Loma Lukbunmi a little 4-fight win streak with maybe a second finish in that run to get her boosted into the rankings, which honestly, Loma Lukbunmi, in terms of the women's strawweight division rankings, if she wins this, I would pit her against a Tisha Pennington, Luiana Pinheiro winner or loser. I'd pit her against maybe if Yasmin Lucindo or Marina Rodriguez lose their next fight. I think there's options for Loma Lukbunmi to maybe tap into that Thailand market. keeping the card rolling. Welterweight division as Ryze Skeletor McKee back in action as he takes on Daniel Frunza. Ooh, Ryze McKee coming into this one is 13-6-1, Daniel 9-2. 6'2 to 6'1. Ryze has 1 inch in height and 5 inches in reach. 78 to 73. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. We'll start with Skeletor. Ryze McKee, the plus 125 underdog. 29 years old from Ireland. Of those 13 wins, 13 finishes, 10 knockouts, and 3 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's been knocked out twice. Ryze has had 2 runs in the UFC, 0-2 in both of them. He's coming back for his first fight since March of 2024, and it's just been little to be desired. 2020, he got finished by Hamzat Chimaev in just brutal fashion, but we'll let that slide. Then had to take on Alex Morono, who basically beat him to a pulp. Took 3 years off, went and won a championship in Cage Warriors. Comes back in September in Paris, drops a decision to Anzlusa. He was then back in Atlantic City in March of last year, and he lost to Chidi and Chukani in a brutal performance. So Ryze, they see potential in the kid, but as of right now, I mean, despite having a 100% finish rate, just has not done much in the UFC. We'll see how he does against the debuting Daniel Frunza, 30 years old, born in Romania, but now trains out of Italy, currently on a 5-fight winning streak. Of his 9 victories, 8 knockouts. Of his 2 losses, he has been submitted in 2 of them. Wow, both of his losses by out of his 2 submission losses, he's been submitted in 2 of them. Yeah, that would make sense, Zachary. Daniel Frunza got a TKO in round number 2 on Dana White's Contender Series, and it was kind of a comeback win for him in that contest. He got dropped in round 1, eventually managed to fight his way back in round 2, get the TKO. I love to see it. I don't know much about Daniel Frunza, but minus 175, I'm yet to see a lot from Ryze McKee, so it's an apex card. Anything can happen, but I'm going to pick Daniel Frunza to make the jump from the Contender Series to the UFC, unless Ryze McKee decides to be good here, which I would not be surprised. We're going to ride with the rising prospect in Daniel Frunza. 5-5 win streak, I mean, he's from Italy. I'm going to Italy. Romania. Andrew Tate's from Romania, and he's not going to lose to the top G, right? If you want to phrase that. Comical stuff. Here's where we get interesting. I just hit the mic. Women's action again. I think it's the final women's fight of the night. Yes, women's flyweight fight here. As Diana, the warrior princess Belbita, is back in action against Dione, the witch Barbosa. Diana Belbita, 15-9. Diona Barbosa, 7-3. 5'7 to 5'6, 1 inch in height for Belbita, 2 inches in reach for her as well, 68 inches to 66. Orthodox stance for both these women. Diana Belbita, plus 530. Dione Barbosa, minus 1,105. That's crazy. That's crazy. We'll start with Diana Belbita, who is just not done good in the UFC. 28 years old. She was also born in Romania, same as Daniel Frunza. She now reigns out of California. Okay, 15 wins. You know, she's gotten 10 finishes, 6 knockouts, 4 subs. Of her 9 losses, though, she's been submitted 5 times. So not too hot. She's gone 2-5 in the UFC. Those losses are twice to Molly McCann, once to some random, once to Karolina Kowalski. Last win came in June of 2023. So she fought in February of 2024. Molly McCann submitted her. That's been that. Diana Belbita back in action, the plus 530 underdog. Her opponent, Diona the Witch Barbosa, 32 years old, the minus 1,100 favorite. Insane. From Brazil, 3 subs of her 7 wins. Of her 3 losses, she's been knocked out once. She was actually supposed to fight Yasmin Jeriguai at UFC Mexico City literally last weekend, but that fight fell apart. Instead, she's picking up Diana Belbita here. Diona Barbosa, she's gone 1-1 in the UFC. Beat Ernesta Karachenka, then lost to Miranda Maverick. Now, the Miranda Maverick loss, not too bad. We know how good Miranda Maverick is. But, I mean, she got a submission win on Dana's Contender Series. You know, the Ernesta fight was boring. The Miranda Maverick fight was boring. Little to be desired. And, you know, this is the surprise jab podcast. This isn't the predictable podcast, okay? This isn't the predictable jab podcast. And Diana Belbita, plus 530. This is 50-50 and no one realizes it, okay? She's fighting Molly McCann. She's fighting Karolina Kowalski. You have one fight against Miranda Maverick, Diona Barbosa. Okay, also, her nickname's the Witch. I don't like witches. Okay, witches are demonic. I'm not demonic. I like Jesus Christ. That's all you need to know. And Diana Bobita, she's from a great Christian nation like Romania. She hails in the very progressive Canada. It doesn't matter. She actually gets finishes. Diana Barbosa does not get finishes. Give me the plus 530 underdog, Diana Bobita. This is what we do, boys. This is what, and girls. And girls, don't think we don't give girls, some ladies, some support on the podcast. Diana Bobita to win this one. Heck, I don't know if knockout or submissions like plus 20,000 or something, but bet on one of those. Diana Bobita over Diana Barbosa. Mwah. I love our prelim predictions. Keeping it up, two more prelims for you. Bantamweight action as Davy Dangerous Grant, back in action against Daniel Willie Cat Santos. What a nickname right there. Davy Grant plus 150, Daniel Santos minus 180. Davy Grant 16-7, Daniel 12-2, 5'8" to 5'7", 1 inch in height for Davy Grant. We also have 2 inches in reach for him, 69-67, orthodox stance for both of our fighters. Davy Grant, we know him, we love him. Been with the UFC for a fat minute. He's 39. You thought Victor Henry was old. Davy Grant, 39, born in England, now trains out of Nevada. 11 finishes and 16 wins, 4 knockouts, 7 subs. Of his 7 career losses, 4 of them have came by submission. Davy Grant, been with the UFC over a decade. I mean, this guy holds a win over Marlon Vera, holds a win over Jonathan Martinez, Luis Smoka, became the first man to defeat Ramon Taveras. I mean, he's good. He's pretty talented. You know, some of his losses, lost on the Ultimate Fighter back in 2013, lost a fight of the night to Marlon Vera, which was very 50-50, lost a fight of the night split decision to Adrian Yanez, and last time he lost was to Daniel Marcos, which a lot of people like myself don't think he actually lost. So 3-1, that one loss, a controversial split decision, not too bad. Last fought in December, absolutely humbled Ramon Taveras, 147 significant strikes, 269. I mean, dude's an absolute killer. Davy Grant, I know I was saying Victor Henry, 37, is getting old, but there's something about Davy Grant. Davy Grant gives off Glover Teixeira vibes, where he's 39 and still looking to be in his prime. So, Davy Grant, English man, pretty much. Love watching him fight. His opponent, the plus, ooh, the minus 180 underdog, ooh, favorite, minus 180 favorite, Daniel Santos, 30 years old from Brazil, 7 finishes and 12 wins, 5 knockouts, 2 subs. He was supposed to fight Daniel Marcos, November in 2023. He was then supposed to fight Saeed Magomedov, October 2024. He has not been able to get a fight for almost 2 years. He last fought Johnny Munoz June 3rd, 2023. Been a long time coming. He beat John Castaneda in 2022, dropped a decision to Julio Arce in 2022. We have not seen Daniel Santos in a long freaking time, guys. It's been a long time coming. And David Grant, he's been active. David Grant last picked up a win over a prospect in December. I'm going against my word. I don't really like Victor Henry. I do like me a little dangerous David Grant. Give me David Grant to win this one. I can't believe he's the underdog. That makes no sense. David Grant should be the favorite in this one. Daniel Santos hasn't fought in 2 years. Give me David Grant all day. Final prelim of the evening. We're in the men's flyweight division as the Jamaican sensation man, O'Day Osborne, takes on Luis Grim Gruley. Wow. What a creative nickname, Lewis. Lewis, minus 275. O'Day, plus 190. O'Day Osborne, the Jamaican sensation. 12-8 with a no contest. I describe him as the flyweight Jalen Turner. They just kind of have the same hairstyle. Luis Garulli, 10-0. Undefeated fighter streak. 5'7" to 5'5". You get 2 inches a night for O'Day. O'Day also has 9 inches in reach. Holy cow, 73-64. He fights southpaw. Luis fights orthodox. Let's start with O'Day, man. O'Day Osborne, the 33-year-old, is from Jamaica, but actually now trains out of Wisconsin. 9 finishes and 12 wins, 4 knockouts and 5 subs. And out of his 8 losses, he has been finished 6 times. 4 by submission, 2 by knockout. Yeah, not the best for O'Day Osborne. Started off his UFC career not too bad. 5-3. He has since dropped his last 3 fights. Last loss to Ronaldo Rodriguez at the Sphere in 2024, which actually the Sphere is 306. I think I was calling it 316. My bad, but other than that, submitted by Rafael Filho, submitted by Asuma Baev. Last picked up a split decision win over Charles Johnson, February 2023. He's been knocked out by Tyson Nam. He's knocked out Tsarukh Gadashev. He's been knocked out by Manel Capes, submitted by Brian Kelleher. He's knocked out Jerome Riviera. You never know what you get with O'Day Osborne, you know. And I will say his height and reach you would think would play into his favor, but it really hasn't. It really hasn't. But this is a great opportunity for O'Day as he's taken on a debuting prospect. There have been just a terrible string of undefeated fighters losing this year, and we'll see if that kicks up with Luis Garulli. 31 from Colorado, 5 knockouts and 10 wins. And yes, he is undefeated. Picked up a split decision win over Nick Pacini on day one's contender series in October. He landed 105 significant strikes, yet got taken down 10 times. 10 of 20 attempts, okay, for Nick Pacini. 5.5 minutes of control time. So Luis doesn't have the best defense, but I won't lie. Ode landed a takedown against Ronaldo Rodriguez. He also dropped Ronaldo Rodriguez, but we just saw Ronaldo Rodriguez against Kevin Borras last weekend. We know the skill level there. I will say the Charles Johnson win was good. The Zhukashev win was good, but we can't look at those, man. That's 2022, 2023. We can only really look at 2024 at this point for reference, so this is pretty tricky for me. Luis Garuli, he's coming into this one. He's gotten knockouts. He's undefeated. And something's telling me Luis. But also, guys, I was going to pick some other undefeated fighters on this card. And I know there's been a chain of undefeated fighters losing. And some's just speaking to me. Some's saying, Zach, Ode's going to win. Ode's going to do it. He's the man, but I don't think we're going to pick him. Look, Luis, you're 10-0. You want a split decision. You've been taken down. Ode has been here. He's experienced. Give me Ode Osborne. No, I'm just kidding. Give me Luis Garuli. I don't know. I can't decide. Like I tell you guys every week, we do live decisions here on the podcast, and I flip-flop. I never know what to do, and all we've been doing is picking underdogs, so how about we let the dogs eat? Ode Osborne over Luis Garuli. The undefeated streak lives on of fighters losing. You know what? Will I regret it? Maybe. Will it live in infamy? Yes. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we will be getting into our main card predictions. Main card predictions right here. So, back with another undefeated fighter. Middleweight division, Torres Finney, the Punisher. About time this man made his UFC debut. Taking on Robert Robzilla Valentine. What the frick, Robzilla? Torres Finney, 10-0. Robert, 11-4 with a no contest. 6-2-5-8. 6'2" to 5'8", 6 inches in height for Robert Valentine. Only 2 inches in reach, though. 77 and 75, orthodox stance for both of these boys. Torres Finney, -225. Robert Valentine, +170. Ooh, not too shabby. Torres is coming into this one, 26 years old from Georgia. He is a wrestler. He has 7 knockouts and 1 submission. Of his 10 wins, and, you know, Torres, we've seen him. 3 appearances on Dana White's Contender Series, 3 wins, finally got the contract last time out. He competed twice last season, and finally, Mick and Dana had seen enough, and were like, you know what, well, Sean had seen enough, we'll hire this guy, all right? Torres dominated his opponents. He's been really good overall. You know, he's young, 10-0, hungry. We've seen the takedowns, we've seen the striking. I don't know what we're going to give this guy, but like I said, the wrestling background, he's a ground and pounder. That is the name of the game for him. I think that's where you see Torres Finney really stand out. He's repping the South. He's the grappler. See how he does. +170 underdog, Robert Valentine. Robzilla, that's his nickname. Coming to this one, 30 years old from Switzerland. 9 of 11 wins by finish, 3 knockouts, 6 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times, twice by knockout, 1 by sub. And yes, he was runner-up on Dana White's Contender Series. Not Dana White's Contender Series, The Ultimate Fighter. Ryan Loader absolutely ran through him. Now, Robert Valentine had 2 round-one finishes on The Ultimate Fighter. Gets into his match against Ryan Loader. Ryan just takes him down and just obliterates him, man. It was brutal. It was tough to see, and if that's what Ryan Loader is doing to you, imagine what Torres Finney is good to you. So this was pretty easy for me. I know we have an undefeated fighter curse, but not every undefeated fighter's lost this year. Torres Finney, 26. He's 4 years younger. His exact game plan is exactly how Robert Valentine lost his UFC debut. So that should speak to you on how good Torres Finney is. Torres Finney, round 2 TKO. I might even go round 1 TKO. I'm very confident in this sport. Keeping it up, men's middleweight action. Brad Tavares takes on GM3. Gerald Meerschaert. Brad, -260. Gerald, +210. Yet another underdog, which makes no sense. I'm picking so many underdogs this card, and I'm so caught off guard that the Vegas is ranking them as underdogs. Brad Tavares, 20-11. Gerald, 37-18. Both men are 6'1". 3 inches in reach for Gerald, 77-74. Southpaw with that left hand for Gerald, orthodox with the right for Brad Tavares. Brad, the -260 favorite, is 37 years old. There it is, from Hawaii. 5 knockouts and 2 subs. That's right. 7 of 20 wins by finish. He is a decision machine. Of his 11 losses, he's been knocked out 5 times. That's right. This boy goes to decision a lot. Brad, been with the UFC since 2010. That is right, 15 years for good old Brad Tavares. He's found some killers here and there. Yoel Romero, Tim Bolsch, Robert Whittaker, Israel Adesanya, Edmund Shahbazyan, Justus Duplessis, Bruno Silva, and yeah, he's lost to all of them. He's actually on a 2-fight losing streak. Gregory Rodriguez TKO'd him, and he lost a split decision to Joonyoung Park in October of last year. Last win came against Chris Weidman at UFC 292 in 2023. So, been a fat minute since we've seen Brad Tavares pick up a win. And yeah, we've seen him get taken down. We've seen him get outstruck. Brad Tavares has been little to be desired as of late. He's never been submitted, though. I do want to say Brad's never been submitted. He's only been knocked out in his losses. But that's about to change, ladies and gentlemen, as we enter the best submission artist, one of the best gatekeepers of them all, GM3, the plus 210 underdog, Gerald Meerschaert, 37 from Wisconsin, 6 knockouts, 29 subs. That's right, 35 of 37 wins by finish. Of his 18 losses, he's been finished 13 times, 9 of those by subs. This man, so most submissions in middleweight history, he's also probably been submitted the most in middleweight history. But Gerald Meerschaert, you gotta love him. Gotta love the guy. And he lost last time out to Rainier Day Ritter in November, which was his last fight. But before that, submitted Edmund Shahbazyan in August, submitted Brian Barberina in March. I do want to read you just some of the guys GM3 has lost to in his 9-plus years with the UFC. Thiago Santos, Jack Hermanson, Kevin Holland, Eric Anders, Khamzat Chimaev, Christoph Jocko, Joe Pyfer, Andre Petrovsky, and Rainer Day Ritter. Like, this guy is only really losing the best of the best. Holds wins over Bruno Silva, Dustin Stolfus, Makhmud Muradov, I mean, Trevin Giles. You know, a lot of names you might recognize. I like him. And but when I right when I saw this picked, I'm like immediately thinking Gerald Meerschaert. And as much as I was like, Diana Belbita is a super big risk, you got Pedro Falco, Talion Clark, I'm doing a lot of risk on this card. It's weird to think that Gerald Meerschaert at plus 210 is actually a pretty big risk in the betting world, when in all reality, I genuinely think he's going to win. I don't know what Brad Tavares could do to win this. He'd have to win in the striking. I think Gerald's going to take him down, get a hold of his neck, hit him with the guillotine. That's going to mean lights out for Brad Tavares. So give me Gerald Meerschaert to win this one by submission. I'm honestly very confident in this pick. And if it doesn't come true, I'll probably just go, damn, Gerald Meerschaert. Got to get back one day. Next up on our docket, men's heavyweight action. As you would be surprised, the number 15th ranked heavyweight is Kennedy Ajuku, the African Savage. How about that? Taking on Martin Badez Boudet, B-A-D-Y-S, Baddies? Martin Baddies Boudet, okay. It's kind of a funky name. Kennedy, 14-5. Martin, 14-2. Minus 270 for Kennedy, plus 220 for Martin Boudet. 6'5-6'4, 1 inch in height for Kennedy, and he has a notable 6 inches in reach. 83-77, southpaw for Kennedy, orthodox for Martin Boudet. Kennedy, that's right, he's ranked number 15 in the men's heavyweight action division, I should say. 32 years of age, from Nigeria, but now trains in Dallas at Fortis MMA. 10 knockouts and 1 sub, 12 of 14 wins by finish. And of his 5 losses, he has been finished 3 times, 2 by knockout, 1 by sub, but moved up from light heavyweight at heavyweight, 2 wins, both in round 1, both knockouts, over Chris Barnett, Lucas Brzeek. So those guys aren't good, okay? That's something I do want to get across, that Chris Barnett, Lucas Brzeek are not that good. Some of his losses, Dustin Jacoby, Ovin St. Preux, Nicolas Negomirano, Dawoon Jung, you know, it's been hit or miss with him. He's had main events against freaking Ian Kudalaba. He's beaten Devin Clark. And then he's dropped decisions to Ovin St. Preux, which make literally no sense. He's been knocked out by Dustin Jacoby. Makes no sense. So it's really hit or miss with Kennedy and Chukwu. But I do think this is kind of a test if he can move up in the men's heavyweight division, because the men's heavyweight division is just about impossible to break into. I actually heard a rumor that they might do Derek Lewis versus Tashaun Teixeira, and even that, I don't know if Tashaun Teixeira can make the jump. So we'll see if Kennedy can get past Martin Boudet. This should be a formidable test. Martin Boudet coming into this one, 33, the plus 220 underdog from Slovakia, rep in Slovakia. 9 wins of his 14 have came by finish. He's gotten 6 knockouts and 3 subs. 1 of his 2 losses have came by knockout, and he actually was supposed to fight Rizvan Kuniyev in December of last year, 2024, and that fight never materialized. He's been waiting to get an opportunity. He last fought in June of 2024, where he picked up a split decision win over Andrei Arlovsky. actually retired him. His lone loss is to none other than Shamil Gaziev, the biggest meme fighter. Holds some wins over Josh Parshan, Jake Collier, also Lucas Brzezic, Chris Barnett. You know, when you think of fat, random prelim fighting, even just Apex card fighting heavyweights, Martin Boudet comes to mind. And I was really thinking about picking Martin Boudet, but Martin has no momentum rolling in. A lot of people thought Andrei Arlovsky won the last fight, and Kennedy's on a roll. Kennedy's confidence is at all-time high. He just got another round one finish, 2-0 at heavyweight. I mean, I think Kennedy's taking this one. I'm feeling a knockout, too. I'm feeling like a Shamil Gaziev style, where he's just, Shamil's just laying into Martin, and Martin wasn't even fighting back, and the ref's like, stop, stop, stop. That's what I think Kennedy's going to do, and you might even see Martin Boudet fall over. Should be an interesting contest. Following our heavyweights, we're back in the little boy division. Bantamweight, and this is another 50-50 one. This one's going to be interesting. Cortavious Romeos versus Chang Ho Lee. Cortavious, 9-3. Chang Ho, 10-1. 5'8 to 5'4. Romeos is 5'4. Wow. 4 inches a night for Chang Ho. 1 inch in reach for Chang Ho. 69-68. Southpaw for Romeos. Orthodox for Chang Ho Lee. Martin Boudet, you know, he was weighing 260. Cortavious, 135. That's crazy. About half a human almost at that point. Cortavious is plus 145. Chang Ho minus 175. Cortavious coming in this one is the underdog. 31 years old from Wisconsin. A couple of Wisconsin fighters on here. 7 of his 9 wins have came by finish. 2 knockouts, 5 subs. And of his 3 losses, he's been knocked out once. He was actually knocked out by Ramon Taveras on Dan West Contender Series. Came back on the last season of Dan West Contender Series and got a unanimous decision win. Then took on Gaston Bolonos, we mentioned earlier. He then beat him in November of last year. So Cortavious coming in this one, not the best momentum. You know, 9-3, nothing more to say. He was just kind of outclassed by Gaston Bolonos, but not to the point where it was bad. Almost just like, what are you doing, bro? So Cortavious, he is the underdog. This is a 50-50 fight. We'll see how it goes. His opponent, Chang Ho Lee, 30, South Korea. 6 of 10 wins by finish. He's gotten 4 knockouts, 2 subs. He's currently on a 4-fight winning streak. He won the last season's Road to the UFC event. Beat Zhao Long by split decision at Whitaker versus Al-Kasarov. That was UFC Saudi Arabia, June of 2024. And yeah, both of his wins on Road to the UFC were knockouts in round 1 and round 3. He's coming in with some momentum. Can't lie. And Cortavious was kind of appetizing, but I don't know. I'm thinking Chang Ho Lee. I kind of like to root for South Korean people. You know, big fan of... I'm not trying to sound racist. Squid Games, like, and I like how the show is set in South Korea, and they have a lot of South Korean actors. That's just literally how I feel. So when I see South Korean UFC fighters, I mean, you get Korean Zombie when he's fighting. You get Doo Ho Choi. You get, oh my gosh, what's his name? He's been knocked out all the time. Featherweight always gets knocked out, but big fan of him as well. And Chang Ho Lee. I kind of like, he's coming in with some momentum. And I watched Cortavious lose a close decision to someone of Gaston Bolano's talent. Gaston wasn't really coming in with much momentum. And Chang Ho Lee just won the road to the UFC. You got to be pretty good to do that. You got to beat out almost all the top talent in Asia. So we're going to go with Chang Ho Lee, pick up a decision here. Maybe a knockout, maybe a submission. I don't know, but sorry, Cortavious. We're riding with Chang Ho Lee. Then we get into two of the best fights of the evening, and they're both in the men's featherweight division. First up on the docket, Pat Sabatini back in action as he takes on Johanderson Tubarão Brito. Johanderson Brito, one of my favorite fighters in the men's featherweight division. Pat, plus 170. Johanderson, minus 205. Pat Sabatini is 19-5. Johanderson, 17-4-1. 5'8 for both of these men. 72 inches in reach compared to 70. 2 inches for Johanderson Brito. And orthodox hands for both of our gentlemen. Johanderson, 30 years old from Brazil, has 15 of his 17 wins by finish, 7 KOs, 8 submissions, and of his 2 losses, he has been finished in both of them, once by knockout and once by submission. But this dude's an absolute killer. Fought on Dan West Contender Series and beat Diego Lopez. Lost his UFC debut in awkward fashion on short notice, but after that, picked up 5 straight finishes. Knocked out Andre Feely, submitted Lucas Alexander, knocked out Weston Wilson, submitted Johanderson Brito, and injured Jack Short. Actually legitimately injured him, and he couldn't continue fighting. Now, he lost a split decision to William Gomez in Paris in September. BS. Such BS. I don't understand how he lost that. I'm actually so pissed about that. Not even going to touch on it. That is actually insane that Johanderson Brito lost that. But Pat Sabatini, the underdog, 34, from Pennsylvania. Of his 19 wins, 1 knockout, 13 subs. This boy is a grappler through and through. 3 of his 5 losses have came by knockout. Last loss to Diego Lopez in 2023. last time he fought, October 2024, where he submitted Jonathan Pearson round number one. He's also submitted Jamal Emmers, Lucas Almeida. He's lost to Damon Jackson. You know, you never know what you get with him. You never really know. But I'm going to be honest, Pat Sabatini, yeah, I know I don't hate you, but Joanna Sombrito is so freaking good. And Joanna Sombrito in the rankings, men's featherweight rankings, you know, I'm taking him over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the bottom five. And maybe even a couple in the top 10 of the men's featherweight division. So I'm high on Joanna Sombrito. I want y'all to know that. I'm predicting a round one knockout. This one's kind of easy for me. He's the favorite. I'm rooting for him, Joanna Sombrito. With that, we get into the main event. Pretty good main event. This is a tough test for both of these guys. A lot of things are riding on the line. Number 8 ranked featherweight, Josh Emmett. Number 10 ranked featherweight, Lerone Murphy. Coming into this one, Josh, what is it? CCO Emmett, I think his nickname is. 19-4. Lerone, the Miracle Murphy, 15-0 with one draw. 5'9 to 5'6, 3 inches in height for Lerone, 3 inches in reach as well for Lerone, 73-70. Orthodox stance for both of our fighters. That's right, Josh Emmett plus 220, Lerone Murphy minus 270. Some other people tell me he's minus 365. People are telling me Lerone Murphy is a massive underdog. I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. This is going to be good. Josh Emmett, 40 years old. Weird to think. Josh Emmett, 40 years old. Just kind of crept up on him. From Sacramento, 9 of his 19 wins by finish, 7 KOs and 2 subs. All 7 of those knockouts have been good. Can't even lie. And 2 of his 4 losses, he's been finished in. Once by sub, once by submission. You know, Josh Emmett, been with the UFC for 9 years. He's had some dogfights. You know, he really has. You know, Ricardo Lamos, great knockout there. Jeremy Stevens, Michael Johnson knockout is legendary. Mirsad Bektic, Shane Burgos fight of the night. Dan Ige fight of the night against Calvin Kattar. And then Sfan Yair, been submitted. Last time he lost, Ia Topira, June of 2023. Last time he won, December 2023, when he knocked out Bryce Mitchell cold. So took the entire year of 2024 off. Might be dealing with some injuries. And yeah, his last two losses, Yair Rodriguez, who fought for the belt after beating him, and then Ia Topira, who is one of the best champions we got out there. So Josh Emmett, he has knockout power. He can go the distance. I don't actually think he's ever truly won a main event. He obviously beat Calvin Kattar, but I never thought he did. Ia Topura whooped him. I just, you know, Jeremy Stevens, we fought him. He beat him. I don't know. I think Josh Emmett is good, but I think he has potential to be beat. And that's what I think will happen here. Lerone Murphy, 33, the minus 270 favorite from England. 7 KOs and 15 wins. He is slowly becoming a decision machine. But, you know, he's undefeated. He's undefeated. You know, he's been improving. Split decision draw on his debut. Then gets a TKO. Then beats Douglas Silva de Andrade. Then knocks out Mankwan Mirakani with a nasty knee. Then beats Gabriel Santos in a tough, tough decision. Humbles Josh Koulibaly. Then has a fight of the night against Edson Barboza. 5-round main event in May of last year. And then in October, almost gets knocked out by Danny Gay round one. Fights back and wins rounds 2 and 3. We've seen him fight adversity. I think overall, Lerone Murphy is the total package. I just think the one issue you're going to see Lerone lose is if he can't land a takedown and if Josh Emmett knocks him out. Okay, and we've had the undefeated fighter curse, but I don't think it breaks here. I don't think it breaks here. I'm going with Lerone Murphy. I'm also visually picturing myself watching this fight, and I would probably be rooting for Lerone Murphy. So the miracle is going to survive the undefeated curse and truly pull off a miracle decision win. I think 5 rounds. I don't see Lerone getting a finish over Josh Emmett. I think it'd be vice versa. However, Lerone Murphy is still going to rock with him. So those are predictions for the prelims, for the main card. A lot of fun action coming at you this weekend. Might watch it. I've kind of amped myself up. I kind of do it with all these cards, but there have been some brutal main events, okay? As much as we've had some good main events, we've had some brutal ones. Moreno, Usyk, L. Edwards, Brady, a lot of people are calling an L. I liked Vittori Dolidze, an L. Perrin Akhlaev, I picked Akhlaev, but still 5 rounds at L. K-Paul Maiev, Fon, Pseudo Song, L. Kadir Rodriguez, W. Duplessis Strickland, an L. Asanya Imovov, W. Dirt Hibas, a W. Makhachev Moikato, a W. We'll see how the year progresses. But yeah, another Apex card. I can look past it. I truly can. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Surprise Shit Podcast. It was fun. You know, we talked about Reacher, the Final Four, NBA, new UFC fight. And of course, our UFC Vegas 105 predictions. Guys, make this the best weekend of your lives. Go out there and tell everyone about the Surprise Jab podcast. Hey, if you ever want somebody to come on and talk to me, if you listening want to come on and talk to me, shoot me a message. Pretty open book, and I love talking to people. Guys, as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab podcast.